Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? It's the Whitetail Weatherman here bringing you the latest in rain forecasts here in Texas, because that's what we have. We have been getting dumped on, except for in the application process. We have drawn some tags recently.
Hallelujah.
I guess you could say technically they're dumping tags on us right now.
That'd be good.
But I was thinking dump as being a negative context.
Usually.
Yeah. So.
Why Tyler crying?
Because I just got dumped on. I love it. We've drawn some tags recently, which is exciting. You know, I mean, none of them have been like sheep tags or anything, but I do actually know somebody I'm very close to that drew a sheep tag in Nevada.
That's right, man. The rich get richer. This guy is a hardworking man who's, you know, pretty wealthy and has been able to purchase some sheep tags elsewhere, but just was blessed
to draw
a Lower 48 sheep tag, man. Yeah. How cool was that?
Yeah.
He's excited about it, too. I talked to him the other day. Yeah.
He is, man. He's really pumped. You know, what's crazy is, like, he has bought a few sheep hunts, but, like, he doesn't go and buy the, like, for sure sheep hunt that mm-hmm. you can buy for $60,000 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants to find a deal and work hard for it because he's been on lots of sheep hunts he hasn't killed on.
Yeah.
And so, like,
You've been on two of those with him.
I have. It's crazy, dude. Like, and he just eats it up. He loves the experience. He loves the stories and stuff like that. And he truly hunts for the right reasons, you mm-hmm. know, which is cool. So.
Yeah, man. He's a cool dude. He's excited about it. A guy I'm excited to talk to today is Jesse Griffiths.
Mr. Jesse.
We say this thing a few times here and there, but Jesse might be our most tenured guest at this point with this podcast. I think it's number 4. Described... Not self-described, but describe other people as Texas royalty. Mm-hmm. So he might have an idea about what to do with a sheep once you shoot it. So maybe we can talk old your buddy in to listen to this podcast and learn how to cook the thing.
How to cook a sheep.
That's right. Yeah. But we've got tags rolling in. Sounds like we're going to be doing a lot of whitetail hunting.
Yeah.
Maybe some other stuff, too. Who knows?
Uh-huh. Maybe some mule deers.
Maybe some deer sis.
We've been looking at some Nebraska stuff.
Some either ors. Dude, I'm pumped about Nebraska right now.
Are you?
Yes.
All right. That's good.
Yes, I am.
Because I am not.
I found some good-looking stuff last night. I'm going to have to talk Tyler into driving 2 or 3 more hours.
Oh, can I just make a bed in the back?
You can.
Sleep a little bit.
That's fine with me. Here's the deal. The standard is our Arizona trip from 2016.
Mm-mm.
And I've seen you do it. Therefore, I know you can do it.
I was like 13 years old at that time. I had lots of energy.
Well, we drove probably 17 hours that day, right?
That's bad.
We left at 4. And what always helps when you drive west is you gain an hour with your lose gain, however you want to say it. Yeah, on the way back, it turns into a doublé. Yeah, so it just really dumps on you. But there's some good stuff up there, man. I'm pretty soaked about it.
Yeah, I guess.
Especially if we have resolved, or this is the announcement, all right, guys. Team Element, which is not a term we like to really throw around very much because it sounds real our group here, we are not going elk hunting unless we find something special.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to leave it at that. But this September will be the first time in a long time that we don't enter the elk woods unless something crazy happens.
Sad deal for you, man.
Yeah.
I know you love it.
I do, but it's all right, man. If I get to go on another adventure trip to a place I've never hunted before, it'll be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Especially with the ticks.
That's right.
Ticks make it all the better.
That's right, dude. A little extra snack every day, you know? Just be like a possum eating 5,000 of them, right?
That's right. A day, I think, is what they do, right?
Yeah. People talking about possums are like, dude, just get some chickens, man. Yeah. They smoke ticks.
Yeah.
You know? So
they do some pecking.
They do.
Peckers.
They are ruthless. Mean little suckers.
They are, man.
Yeah.
I got plenty of them.
But, I'm stoked about that. It's going to be kind of warm. You know, that's the other thing about elk hunting is it gets you the opportunity to go to the mountains, which I know it's super white girl, but we all love the mountains. You know? You got mountains on your shirt right now. They're not blue. Mm-hmm. We don't, because mountains aren't blue around here very often, but, those are good mountains.
Yeah.
Hey, you got the graphic tee too.
Yeah, I know.
Onyx sends us some stuff from time to time to wear.
It's kind of tight.
And,
I need to play some basketball.
I can fit down for sure. I just have like the branding, but that's a cool shirt.
It is a cool
one. I'm going to take a picture of that and send it to Jared and tell him I want one.
Be like, yo, dude.
Yo.
Make this happen.
So we can have. Dude, here's the other problem. When you get a shirt I don't get, it messes up the Element outfit thing.
I know.
Yeah.
How many times do we show up to the truck with the same outfit on?
All the time. Especially when that. What's the name of that hoodie we wear all the time?
The Element hoodie, I think.
No.
You can find them on the Element.
I don't wear it. Yeah, you can. That thing's real cool.
What hoodie? You talking about the Sika one?
Yeah.
I
can't remember what it's called. Maybe it's Kelvin something.
Oh, you talking about the jacket?
Yeah.
The solid?
Yeah. The solid one.
Yeah. I think it's Kelvin Light, Down Light or something.
It's not super expensive, and I'm not trying to sell y'all Sika jackets, but
I live in that thing.
That thing. Tyler wears it when it's 80 degrees outside, and I don't know how he does it, but
it hadn't been 80 all spring.
But either way, you see us in some Wrangler pants, which I am trying to sell y'all, not because they pay us, but because
you're a cowboy.
Them things, you can't beat them. But,
because you like George Strait.
That's right. Headliner for ACL this year.
Really?
Uh-huh.
How about that?
I think ACL. ACL.
ACL surgery or?
Austin Steele Lennox. him and that eyelash girl. So that'll be weird.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Billy George Eilish?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think they're both country singers. I don't know for sure. But
if you got three names, man, you are a country singer. You have to.
That's right. A guy who does not have three names and really only needs one, Jesse.
Jesse.
Is who we're talking to today, like we said before.
Chef Jesse.
Jesse does a lot of cool stuff. Chef Jesse probably would work. Just connoisseur Jesse, fisherman Jesse.
King Jesse.
That's it. King George, whatever. King Jesse is where it's at, man. So Jesse's got a new book coming out that's pretty exciting. I am pretty looking forward to it because it's kind of in the same vein of stuff that I enjoy, with, you know, eating hog meat, I'm looking to forward to seeing maybe some of the, like, other stuff that he does, especially on the sausage end.
Man, for real. Like, what I look at a lot of times, when I look at meat, wild game meat, if you're talking, like, deer meat especially, like, I think, you know, you grind it or you do steaks or roasts. And that's kind of like, I mean, I have a few things that I've done differently, and obviously cookbooks kind of help me expand that. But then, like, if you, when you talk to Jesse and you're like, yeah, man, I'm thinking about, you know, shooting a sheep this year or whatever, you know, if I was to say that, and then he would name off, like, off the top of the dome, like 30 different things you could do with it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I know what that is. I just don't know why I never thought of putting wild game meat into that, you know, and doing it. So he's like, you can tell he does it all the time.
Oh yeah, man. He does for sure. And I'm definitely interested to see what's in that book. I know that, one of our buddies, at the hog hunt won a signed copy of that. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, him get that book. And then, if y'all, want to check that out, I think he's sold out of the first run anyways, but you'll be able to purchase those most likely in the restaurant or, offline somewhere. So it's just called the Hog Book. I think it has an illustration of a hog on the front or something like that. So, it should be pretty sweet, but I'm sure that, we'll talk a little bit about that in the podcast here, but we'll probably talk a lot more about just random delicious things, I'm sure. So, if it sounds good to you, I would like to salivate a little bit. So let's get Jesse on the phone.
All right. Okay, so now on the phone, we have Texas royalty, the Sultan of Shrimp, the Great Pompano, the Colossus of Clout, Jesse Griffiths. Jesse, it's good to have you back on, man.
Oh, that is. I think you get more bombastic with each intro every time we do this. That was
well.
And I have a feeling you came up with that on the spot too.
No, so I did.
More impressive.
I wrote it like 5 minutes ago, but I did. KC did remind me that I think we posted a picture or something of you recently. Maybe I can't remember. And somebody on there commented like Texas royalty, right?
Oh no!
What happened?
We were talking back and forth on Instagram, like one of our posts.
Oh, okay.
And somebody messaged us and was like, "Man, you got Texas royalty commenting on your post."
Yeah, that's right.
Like,
that's right.
I know, dude. Yeah. We're in the in crowd in Texas when we talked to Jesse.
I just went with it, dude. After that, you know, salt and the shrimp sounded good.
Yeah. Is that a title that you know of? Like, are you known as Texas royalty, or is that like a newer thing for you?
I am not. I thought that was like a Sam Houston and Willie Nelson territory right there. So yeah. I think
maybe you're new guard, you know, that's the old guard.
But. I don't know about it. Okay. Well, I'll take it.
Dude, you're a cool dude, man. We enjoy your friendship for sure. And then obviously having you on the podcast is just a cherry on top of it, man. But we actually tried to get you on kind of back around our hog hunt, which happened in kind of early February. That you are a busy man. I think we actually scheduled this interview in like March or something. Is that right?
Yeah.
Man, that's when I'm having to like go onto my calendar 2 months ahead of time to schedule stuff out, I will feel like probably overwhelmed, but also like maybe I'm doing something right. You know what I mean?
It's a bit of both, yeah. But you know, I have busy seasons. You know, hunting season. You know, corresponds with busy restaurant season. So that's just a wash, you know. It's like I am not available, and then you know, mid-February through the end of March, I am not available, because that's my fishing season right there. That's my crappie and my white bass.
That's sockeye season, and, right?
Yeah. So I purposely don't book myself during that time very much at all. So,
cool.
But yeah, it's been a busy year in spite of some things. So
that's how did the sockeye season go for you this year?
It was short. It was good, but it was short. I think I probably pulled the plug on it before the spawn was actually over. In full disclosure for the listeners out there, I don't have a boat, so my crappie season is abbreviated, and I like it that way. I really do like that. I hit them during the spawn. I try to hit them as hard as I can, and then move on. But it was short. I think that winter storm that we had just threw just about everything off. Name it, and it just kind of made it longer, shorter, better, worse, awful, whatever. And in my mind, the spawn started maybe 2 weeks later on the lake that I fish, which I'm probably won't name. But
I wouldn't either.
You know what's funny? Every time on Instagram, somebody's like, "Where did you catch those fish?" And I will give them an answer. And I just want everyone to know that 100% of the time, I am lying.
Yeah,
like, I am not truthful about where I catch fish.
We are usually real truthful, but very broad. So, like, it's real fun to be like, yeah, south of the Red River, but, you know, kind of east
of ITN.
North of ITN or something like that, you know. It's pretty fun to do for, especially for people who may not be geographically inclined, you know. They're like, oh, okay. And then they got to look it up and like, oh, man.
Man, they got me. They got me. Yeah. So, how do you, I don't know, I don't know if you've ever been able to use this or not, but you might have seen it or heard about it. How do you feel about live scoping for crappie?
You know, that's really funny. I was thinking about that today.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that yesterday because I was fishing a river yesterday. Let's call it the Red River.
Yeah. Okay. I can tell that's a lie.
Yeah. And I was fishing, and it was a little muddy. The water had come up with all the recent rains, and I almost didn't even go. When I drove over it, I was like, I don't think it's going to be worth it. Turns out it was worth it, but that's a different story. And the water was a little muddier than usual, and usually this river is super clear, so you know it's not the Red. But anyway, so one thing I realized since I was a little kid, one of the things I enjoy the most about fishing is that you don't know what's in the water. And I think it's like that whole mystery to me is a big part of it. And it's just trying, like, there's guesswork. And eventually as you mature as a fisherman, you start to just realize where fish are and you become better and better at it. And it kind of solves that mystery a little bit, but not entirely. And it never will. And so I think to me, live scope is, I'm not going to call it cheating or judge it at all. I think it's totally fine. If you got me on your boat and we were doing it, I'd probably have a fine time with it. But I have to say personally that I enjoy the mystery of not knowing what's down there and trying to figure out in spite of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also, oh, go ahead.
Well, I don't know if you saw, we released a video this spring where we, a friend of a friend kind of, who's a guide, and basically just a crappie guide, and he has the live scope, and, like, you know, everybody's doing it in the tournaments and stuff now. Mm-hmm. It was so effective that it kind of scared me, you know, like I literally, and the guides even on the local lake, they've made a pact to, they have decreased their personal limits by 5 on a daily limit to take, because it's ridiculous. Like, we caught a lot of crappie the day we went with them, and if we had been trying to figure it out that day, it'd have been like 2, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It was
scary how you could find these crappie that were just, you know, they were literally halfway suspended in the water column. I mean, there's just hardly a way to figure it out,
stumps,
you know?
As a means to a meal, it really makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
You know, like, it's a great way to maximize your time. But if you're going to invest in it, you're probably not a guy who's only going to do it twice a year, you know? So it's kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, it's kind of weird. There's a lot of stuff, you know, I think woodsmanship is kind of the umbrella that this stuff falls under, you know, that, technology kind of lends itself towards trying to take the edge off of that, you know? And I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about it because that's the world we live in, you know? But
It's new. It's new because obviously it's a new technology. So, like, I think it's one of those things that is not easy just to process real quick for some people and write off or, you know, whatever. I think also if you're kind of a thinking man, like, and you enjoy trying to figure out, like, morally how you feel about certain things, then it may take time for you to come to conclusions on stuff. Yeah. So, but,
you know, you can get real wide with this because you could say, well, this reservoir isn't natural anyways, so let's just drain the sucker and just get all the fish, you know? Like, you know, what the heck? I don't know. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, like, but where's the line, I guess?
Yeah.
You know?
You know, if it's not a naturally flowing river in Texas, you know, it's outside of Caddo Lake, you know, which is now sort of dammed, at least level controlled.
I have a solution, guys.
Do you?
I just thought of
it. Let me hear it.
Okay, so there should be some kind of a I hate to say tax here, KC.
Oh, you're going to get my libertarian thing raging here.
Okay, there should be some kind of like a self-imposed tax.
There we go. Okay. That's what we're talking about.
That goes on the sales of these live scopes, and it goes towards expanding the state fishery program where we are brooding crappie and stocking more crappie in lakes. What do you think about that?
I love it.
There's something there. There's something there.
That way, it's like if we're going to take more, we're also going to kind of give back to the program that puts more in there. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so many. It's so complicated.
Are you going to do any saltwater stuff this summer?
A couple trips. I think I might be going next week on a quick overnight run. I just need to get my crab traps wet. I don't even know if I'm going to bring a fishing pole, but I want to run down there. And maybe do a little flounder gigging and some crab traps, maybe just for a night or two. And then we've got some longer trips planned later in the spring, going to Baffin and then another Matagorda trip where we've got a few nights and there'll be some more serious crabbing.
Are you going to do walk and wade flounder or are you going out on the boat?
Walk and wade.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You have Jerry's LEDs. Is that what you use?
It's a cheap little light that I bought, I believe, at Academy.
Oh, cool.
It's a little PVC deal. It works pretty good. And I've got my patented crab net on one end and gig on the other.
There you go,
dude.
And a little kitty litter bucket that's got a PVC flotation around it that the crabs go in, and we just drag that behind us and scoop crabs and stick flounder. And,
that's cool.
Then we stuff the crabs into the flounder.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dude. You're just – what you do is – I'm so jealous, dude. Like, I can't tell you – if I could make a career like yours, it would be it's ideal. Like, you have to eat. Why not eat well and then make a living off of it? You know, like, that's so cool, man. That's cool.
Here's an update too. Just yesterday, I don't know why it took me so long to figure this out. And this falls in the category of dress for the job that you want. I went to Parks and Wildlife headquarters yesterday, and I got a commercial freshwater fishing license.
Hey, that's cool.
And a retail fish dealer's license, which enables me to go and fish for non-game species and then sell it out of the restaurant.
Dude.
So we are, again, you know, it's like I got to go to work, which, you know, go fishing now. We're going to be able to put sunfish, like bluegills, redbreasts, red ears, probably cichlids too, on the menu.
Oh my gosh, dude!
Of the restaurant. So,
that's cool.
I mean, I don't know if anybody else is doing anything like that.
No,
I mean,
no.
If you're talking about like local food, and I don't just even mean the sourcing, but I mean get down to the culture of it too.
Yeah.
It's so exciting to me to be able to offer stuff like that to even people that don't, you know, fish at all or never had a whole fried bluegill, but to put that on our menu and be like, you read all this about, you know, oh, this farm salmon is sustainable or, you know, of least concern. Right. But I mean, let's talk about the sustainability or the footprint of this fish that was caught, you know, 8 miles from here, and it's super prolific fish, and it's delicious.
Yeah.
And it speaks to our culture too.
I mean, and it can survive in a drainage ditch, you know, like it doesn't take aquaculture for.
Right. So. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, So let's talk about that a little bit. Where do you plan on, or I guess how, like what techniques are you going to use to source these?
You're obviously is a bad question.
obviously the Red River, but so the, I mean, obviously you're not taking a fly rod out there and catching these things, you know, like there's going to be some kind of method, right?
That's true. And I think that, and I cleared this to a couple game wardens and some very confused people at Parks and Wildlife headquarters. And, I went to them and one person was like, well, you're going to need to also get a boat permit. And I said, well, okay, but I have to get a boat permit for my non-motorized canoe. And they were like, you're a commercial fisherman that doesn't have a motorized boat. I'm like, yes, ma'am. That is true. So they were like, they had no idea what to do, you know, with this permit, but I got it cleared at multiple levels and I think we're all good. But the technique is just an ultralight rod. And I use mealworms, giant mealworms.
Yeah.
And that seemed, in my experience, that is absolutely the best bet for sunfish, catfish too. It's just clobber them.
Yeah. Can you serve catfish that way too, or is they're not a game species, right?
Catfish falls under a different category in that the take of catfish is restricted to certain counties.
That's what gets confusing, is because Texas has game species, and then there's also species that have limits and regulations, but they're not game species. I don't quite understand the value system there.
Right. It is pretty complicated, but I'd have to move over. I would only have to move one county over to catch catfish, but I'm going to concentrate right now on the bluegills and the red breasts, because you know those are prolific. I can go and catch a bunch of them.
Yeah.
So no funnel traps. Ease.
No, I don't think so. I think I'm going to do it all fair and square.
That's gotcha. Cool.
For now. So yeah, I mean that's the most fun for me. I mean just using I've got some nice little ultralight rods.
I don't know if you caught that, but Jesse is judging you if you do use a funnel trap because it's not fair and square.
You know me. I don't judge.
We know you.
We know. I'm just giving you a hard time. So I know as soon as you got that permit, your wheels are turning. Can you give us maybe just a menu preview for like what that's going to look like? Just tell me a dish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We tested the dish today with the couple that I got last night. And I'm not going to blow any minds at this one. I mean,
I know you. Hot grease.
Yes. I scaled the fish whole, left the head on, gutted and gilled, and then butterflied the fillets off of it, and then cut each one of those fillets, not off, but I scored them so that they'd be almost come off. I think the best way to describe it is if you can imagine a blooming onion, but it was a fish.
Oh, my goodness.
So I cut the fillets total into six pieces that are still attached to the rib cage, and then did a mustard and buttermilk marinade on that, and then tossed that in a dredge of cornmeal and some spices like garlic powder, onion powder, celery seed, things like that. And then we fried that until it's crispy. And what it did is it exposed, when you get those fillets off there, and you make sure you get that dredge in those fillets. And so it exposed all those fins. And so they got super crispy and you got the fish chips. And then all you got to do to pull that fillet off is just literally grab it and it just comes off in a nice little bite-sized piece. And we tested it today with a little remoulade sauce that we make, and it's just going to be an appetizer. It's going to be a whole fried fish, whole fried bluegill that you can get, along with some venison tartare, and then eat a pork chop.
I can't get that. That is right. I think you've described my order. Y'all, the time is here. The whitetail finally are developing brow tines. And you know what that means. We have made the turn, and it is time to think about deer season and elk season and all those other seasons that are coming up. And with that comes tinkering with your equipment. Let me tell you, you need to check out some Vector Custom Arrows, okay? They have got a sweet website, and it's fixing to get even better, okay? But you can go in, put in all your statistics for your draw length, draw weight, all that stuff, and they'll give you a couple different choices of different arrows to choose. And get this, he just said it was a soft release, but we're going to do a hard release. They just changed all their arrow tolerances to 1/1000th, right? So you have a premium arrow at a good price. And to mention, you now have a Element code to get you 10% off, okay? So just put all caps Element in the discount code box and get you that fat discount on some sweet arrows from Vector Custom Shop.
How do you, I guess I have several questions that are kind of bouncing around in my mind here. How long are you like doing the marinade part of it?
I'd say up to a day or two. Because got that mustard and that buttermilk, and that's going to start to kind of cure it a little bit. The mustard's very acidic, and that's just mostly meant to give it a nice, to give the dredge, the dry mix, something good to stick to. And also that mustard adds so much flavor. That's one of my favorite ways to fry fish is just, and I've seen that a lot lately, people just tossing their fish, the fillets, just right, rubbing them down with a little bit of yellow mustard, and then going into cornmeal and then frying that. And it's great because it adds a little acidity to it, a little bite. you might not, even if you hate mustard, you might like that, just because it just gives a little more balance.
Yeah.
And, it's a great way to fry fish.
Are you, using any cornstarch in that, you know, in your toss or whatever with the cornmeal?
Not specifically, but you absolutely can. Yeah. That gets a really nice crunchy coating on there. Mm-hmm. You can, I mean, cornstarch, rice flour is another really good one to put in there. It gets really, really crispy.
That's bordering on like tempura at that point in time, right? And that what?
Yeah, it could.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Have you ever tried like a Louisiana hot sauce as like your dredge, I guess, or whatever? You know what I'm saying? Like underneath the breading, I guess?
Yes. So, I mean, a lot of times I'll add that to the mustard and buttermilk sometimes and get that hot sauce in there to make, you know, obviously it's spicier. And what you're doing again is you're adding that acid in there. Mm-hmm. And that's always good in food. It always just, that's why, you know, like squeeze a lemon in your tea or squeeze a lemon on your fish or, you know, salad dressing. Mm-hmm. It's always that acidity that's really like balancing things, especially something that's rich and fried. So hot sauce is going to be really good in there too.
Listen, boys, Tyler spoke for himself a while ago when he said we ate before this. I did not, actually. I have hog spaghetti on the stove. It's waiting. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They get in the mood.
I know, dude. I have to.
Went in Rome.
That's right. You know, what's a shame, and you might have this up your sleeve, but, you know, one of the most glorious things about sunfish is the coloration. They're kind of the trout of the South, you know? Like, each species has its own cool thing. So it would be kind of cool if you could capture that on the plating in some sense. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, especially like those long ears or red breasts, with the blues and, you know, the turquoise and all that. Like, that would be a cool thing to share with people.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. I mean, you haven't seen a more beautiful fish till you've caught a spawning red breast. You know, out of like, you know, like some weedy water where, you know, the fish are always more vibrantly colored.
Yeah, man.
Like tannic or, you know, a lot of hyacinth or hydrilla, for some reason, they just take on a lot better color. Mm-hmm. And when they're spawning, I mean, that's a gorgeous fish right there.
Yeah.
Like really, really pretty. You're absolutely right. Yeah, they are pretty and they're natives. There's just a lot of reasons to be eating those and honor them too. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I have always felt that is a really cool fish and I will fish for those all summer long. I really enjoy that, and I don't do it just as like, oh, it's just easy, or, you know, I would challenge somebody, you know, to go to the River X that I was on yesterday, and I'd be like, you catch me a 9-inch red breast.
That's a toad.
It's so easy. Yeah. You know, they're hard. I mean, you gotta mend your line. You can't have a bad drift. You know, you have to do all these things right. Use light line. You gotta set that hook immediately when they take it. There's a lot of tricks to them, and I think they're cool fish, and they deserve a lot more than the reputation they might have as being like an easy kid's fish. Because I think catching them consistently can be a little tough sometimes. Mm.
Are you do you have like a limit on size that you try to keep for the restaurant, or that you're going to try to keep?
I'd say, you know, like 7 to 9 inches. Mm-hmm. You know, definitely big enough to make it worthwhile. Also, I need consistency.
Right.
So there's actually, you know, another spot really close to my house that I'm probably will fish at, but it's it almost produces fish that are too big. I mean, they average around 10 inches out of this place. And I lost one at the boat probably about 3 weeks ago that was a heartbreaker. I mean, it was every bit 12 inches long. That thing was a monster. I got it right next to me. I saw it. It was very clearly a red breast. And I'm not doing that big one that got away deal, but this big one that got away was a foot plus long.
Oh. It's because you didn't have that King Lear combo with you to scoop it up.
That's right.
So are you going to expand that a little bit? Like, have you thought about anything with gar or anything like that?
No, I hadn't, but that's actually a great idea. I didn't even think about that at all, but yeah, I could. I do believe I'll have to look into it more, make sure I'm completely legal, but I could do some gar.
Yeah.
And you guys know I'm a big fan of the gar, you know, and especially those mid-sized ones, you know, sliced thin and fried or smoked or boiled and made into a cake, stuff like that.
Yeah, that'd man. I think that would really be sweet.
Nice. I'll have to get a knife sharpener after them suckers, though.
I'll show you a trick one time. I'll show you a trick.
Well, I just want
to go in between the scales.
Yeah.
Move your knife at the same angle those scales are. Get that knife in between them. And then you can move their knife. You can cut all the way around their head without going through the scales, and then use the tin snips or the loppers to buck through them.
Yeah, that's a good little tip there. I've just always done the tin snip thing and just kind of worked it. And I'm not going to speak like I eat gar all the time, but I have, and it was, you know, it's pretty good stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah,
I just want to go fishing with you sometime. You know, that's all I want.
Especially the 12-inch red ear or red breast there.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's got to be somewhere on the Red River, probably west of us.
Yeah,
downstream of the dairy barn.
Maybe
probably.
Even just south of the river.
For the fertilizer.
That's right.
Is there if you know, say somebody is inspired and thinking about eating a little bit of panfish this summer? Are there any months where you're kind of, you know, saying, well, this isn't the month for taste purposes, you know what I'm saying?
No, I haven't discovered that. I'm catching them mostly out of pretty cool water, in rivers, and then I mean the lakes. Yeah, they'll start to heat up, but I probably switch over to the rivers at that point. So, I mean, those rivers in Central Texas are flowing; they're pretty cold. Relatively. So, they seem to be good year round, and they bite. I mean, I've caught them out of this river every month of the year, too. They're very active, and so no, I'd say go for it. That's kind of like for me, my seasons just kind of change with the fish or the game as to like what I have ready access to, because you know I try to wrap up my crappie and white bass season in time for turkey, and then as soon as I've killed as many turkeys as legally allowed. I switch over to sunfish and crab for both basically the rest of the summer until it's dove season. You know, it's just kind of, then you know, as time goes on, you just get into those grooves and I'm always looking forward to that next thing. And then when it happens, I'm just like, just super focused on that one thing. Mm-hmm. And I like that. So, I mean, I think seasonally, for me, sunfish is kind of a summer fish because it occupies that time of the year where not much else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they're fairly active. You know, they're long spawners. They'll spawn from that first moon in April all the way through July. So you'll always have a round of fish spawning, and so they're always pretty active and feeding pretty heavily despite that hot water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I heard a Central Texas in there. By the end of this podcast, we'll have your spot. Casey's on X right now.
I hope y'all are watching your accounts because cards are getting hit. It is tag season, which is so much better than application season, but still not quite hunting season. But man, we are getting close. If you drew that magic tag or you know that you are resolving to OTC, no matter what, you need to check out Onyx Maps because that is the most up-to-date, comprehensive, intense, detailed public land mapping system that you can find on your phone application, on your computer, whatever it is. You will be able to see the public land layers, the private land layers, section lines, whatever you think you might need. Onyx has it. So go download the Onyx app on your phone right now. You can find a link in the description below.
So here's a question that has perplexed me for some time now. Every time I go to the coast, I try to do some blue crab stuff, you know, crabbing a little bit and try it. My brother-in-law, he's not really a hunter or fisherman too much, but he goes every time we go do something and he's all about it. You know, like he's up for adventure and he'll eat anything, you know? So like we always do the blue crab thing, but it is so much work. And I'm still like confused sometimes when I open up a crab as to like, 'cause I've heard people say, if you eat the gills, make you sick and all this and that. Can you kind of give me some tips on, I guess, processing crabs? Like, what's the best technique and the easiest way to get the most meat off of those suckers?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with processing them, something that we discovered the past couple seasons is getting live crabs from the coast back home, you know, wherever that may be. For me, it's 3 hours away, typically in the summer, and it's really hard to keep them alive. Mm-hmm. And you're either going to get them too cold or too hot. And, you know, hitting that sweet spot is pretty difficult. So what we do first is drop them in ice water, and that'll kill them, or at least stun them. Pull them out of the ice water, and then remove the top shell of the carapace. And you do that by, it's kind of hard to describe, but you flip that bottom tab off, and mm-hmm. mostly keep them male crabs. So you take that off, and then you pull that top shell off. And it's kind of hard, but you know, you apply a little force to it and you get that top shell off. And then you pull all the guts and the lungs out, the dead man fingers or whatever you call them. And you pull all that out and then break that crab in half. And then what you've got is a clean crab that's got all the guts, the bacteria and stuff out of there. And so that'll hold a lot better. It also cooks a little faster, and it's easier to handle when you start cracking it and eating it. Mm-hmm. And so for transport, we've been doing that. Now, if we're cooking on site, you know, if we're down there on the coast, we just boil them whole because there's not really any reason to go through that process to keep them fresh if you've still got them alive. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah, I mean, that's it. For most people, they're like, yeah, blue crab's a lot of work. And, you know, my answer is usually like, yeah, I never said it wasn't.
Yeah. So, I did. Last time I was we went to Galveston last summer, and we did some crabbing. And I did your it's like a crab spaghetti recipe or whatever. Yeah. I forget what it's called, but it's essentially spaghetti noodles with like butter and, you know, crab meat and all the goods. And it's kind of like, I think you do it on the beach, or at least on your book, it looked like you were doing it on the beach pretty often when you did that.
Yeah. Butter, lemon, garlic. That's it.
Dude, it's all the good stuff.
It's all the good stuff. It's so good, man. Yeah. We did that. My kids ate it up, man. Like,
oh, it's so good.
It's
and you don't
just
need
the best.
A lot.
Yeah.
I mean, what we'll do a lot is, like, you know, all the crabs get boiled at once, and even if we're not going to eat them all. And then maybe the cooked crabs get chilled down, or if we're, for lack of a better term, sober enough at the end of that to continue to clean them, we'll sit there and just pick the meat off of them after a big crab boil, and then chill that meat down. And then you kind of getting that work done ahead of time, you know, paying it forward a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good technique. Or I'll sit down and listen to an invigorating podcast, a couple dudes that travel around and shoot big deer or whatever. and I'll just, you know, sit there and I'll clean crabs for 2 hours. And, you know, drink coffee and whatever. And then I might have 2 quarts of crab meat, which is gold. I mean, the street value of that right now, who knows?
Yeah, yeah, no, for kidding. Real.
$40 a pound for jumbo lump going rate. And so,
really,
you know, pick that. And then for the next couple of days, you've got options. I mean, you're making spaghetti, you're making crab cakes, you're making crab dip. Mm-hmm. All kinds of stuff. And I think it gets real fun if you can just knock that work out. But I mean, there's no way of getting around it. But you know, it's like plucking a dove. Everybody is like, oh, it takes so long to pluck a dove. And my question is, how long would it take you to drive to your dove hunt?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, an hour and a half. And I'm like, it'd take you 45 minutes to pluck a limit of doves. That's mm-hmm. half the time it took you to just drive there. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you, plucking doves is a lot more fun than driving.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, that's a personal thing. But, you know, it's funny when it comes down to time, a lot of us, you know, myself included sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. we just get a little, you know, persnickety about spending our time with kind of the more tedious tasks. But
America,
at the end of the day, I think it's fun.
America's is a busy culture right now, man. Like, it's it's weird, but like, we're expected to do more and more every day, you know, because we have a phone in our hands and we have the ability to send an email while we're driving. You know what I mean? It's just like, the expectation has never been this high for work output. So it really does put a mentality into a lot of people that, man, you know, I can get these doves done in about, you know, 3 minutes, or I can take 45 minutes and mm-hmm. not send the emails I need to send, you know, this mm-hmm. weekend or whatever. So I see where it comes in, you know, but like, fine food is a pretty cool thing for me too.
You know, we learned about this some in anthropology in college, really interesting class. You know, I would suggest anybody if you're at a higher level of learning taking that class, no matter what your major is. But there's like a ratio that goes, or I guess it's probably like an inverse graph or whatever, of like the amount of time spent working compared to calories obtained or something like that. And you would think that we're getting more and more efficient, but it's exactly opposite of that compared to like a hunter-gatherer culture.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So like it was like...
does that have to do with individuals working together better, or how does that...
I think it's just because we've added so many processes or whatever the word is there to what we do for a living. So instead of like me going outside of my current residence and shooting the first bird I see and eating it, now, you know, I go do X, Y, and Z in my daily activities, and my output versus input is way off on the ratio. Mm-hmm. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, I mean, I can shoot a blue jay from my back porch every day right now. You know what I mean? And I'm not an expert on Texas culture, but I'm assuming it was pretty opportunity-based, you know, mm-hmm. just looking from some of the stuff that I've seen, you know. And I'm sure there's some things that were preferred, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, it's, you know, I've got sassafras at like 80 yards right here for making some type of brew or whatever, you know. I got...
They used to put it in like Cajun food too, I believe. Yeah, yeah, like in gumbos and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, man. And like, same deal. Like, we got blackberries and dewberries coming off right now. Just right
the wazoo.
Up.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere. Mulberries.
Oh yeah,
mulberries. Mm-hmm. You know, and so and wow. I, and another thing, like, have you ever heard this, Jesse? I've done a little bit of research on this, but I've read that like robins were a big time like valued species for people. I don't know how long ago this was. I think it was pre like 1950s maybe. Mm-hmm. That like people say they were better than dove, which of course, you know, that's kind of a thing to say sometimes. But like, that's what I've heard. Have you ever heard anything about people hunting robins and eating them?
Yes, sir. I mean, it's they're clean feeders, and they only eat worms. And so I've heard that in all honesty, I've never tried one. It's illegal also, mm-hmm. but I did have a friend who swore that his grandmother, and he was from Louisiana, of course, swore that his grandmother would make robin gumbo. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, no, definitely. And you're right. I think, you know, you go back 1,000 years, that bird is dying. I don't think it matters what kind of bird it is. You know, it's like it's getting shot with one of those little beautiful bird points, you know, those mm-hmm. tiny little arrowheads, you know, on a tiny shaft. And that's what those were for.
Yeah.
And for killing, you know, songbirds, you know, mm-hmm. definitely a source of protein. So,
well, you know, Teddy Roosevelt at his inaugural dinner, I think, well, I can't remember the number for sure, but I think it's 155,000 golden plovers. That's what they served for dinner at the inaugural meal. And a golden plover, I think now, is a threatened species and used to be endangered or something like that. You know, like you don't see very many of them. And they were eating shorebirds at the lighthouse, you know.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, things have changed a lot. I'm sure there's a lot of... well, passenger pigeon, isn't that the one that's extinct?
That's the one that's gone.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a tasty critter.
Oh, I guarantee you. You know? It's in the family,
that's
man.
That's right. Like, golly.
Yeah. It has to be.
If it coos like that and it's not a baby, it's probably pretty good eating. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's right. Have you have you ever done any pigeon hunting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've always shot them, or mostly shot them, you know, in during a dove hunt.
Yeah.
You know, when a pigeon flies over and it's just like, oh, this is great. I absolutely love eating pigeons. I think they're great. You know, a pigeon that's been hitting a cornfield for a couple months is a delicious bird. Mm-hmm. It's just a big dove. I mean, it's a feral rock dove. I mean, it's in the same family. They make great stock. You know, I've made all kinds of things with them. You can slow cook them in the crock pot. You can just take the whole plucked pigeons, throw them in the crock pot, cook them, make some nice stock, and then shred that meat, put that in an egg roll or a taco or whatever it is, and I think you'd be pretty happy with that. I mean, we have a bit of a bias against, you know, the city pigeons.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I mean, a pigeon is a really good game bird.
Can you talk real quick about, like, this wild game bird stock making process? Like, it's very simple, right? I don't guess I ever realized how simple it is until maybe a couple months ago I was looking at a post of yours.
Yeah. Well, I do this thing that I call Sunday stock, and it's actually, I dedicated a little short chapter to it in my new book. And it's a technique where I used to make stock in big batches. And I used to, you know, and during classes, I'd talk to people about stock making. And I can always, you know, you can always tell when you're talking about something and people kind of glaze over and they're like, eh, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I always try to figure out what's the pinch point, you know, at what point are they not going to do that? And why? And then I think it's just like, it's volume. It's a big project, and I'm already trying to tell them to do all these other big projects, like, you know, cut the ribs and save the silver skin and the shanks and whatnot. So, and what I realized is like it's probably a volume deal. And so I started in my own home making this Sunday stock, and it came from, you know, like Sunday's usually a good day for me to cook a bunch of stuff for the coming week. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I just take anything out of my freezer. It could be a hog shank or ham, bone-in ham from like a medium or a small size pig. Maybe it's a shoulder or, you know, a foreshank, maybe, or of a deer. Maybe it's half a dozen doves. Maybe it's a turkey leg, which is a really good one of these. Or maybe it's like a bunch of duck legs or something like that. And then what I do is I throw that in the crock pot, cover it with water, and then put in whatever I got on hand. And that's going to be onion skins or onions, maybe a piece of celery, maybe a carrot, maybe a bay leaf. Throw that in there and let that rip. You know, just let that go for 8 hours or whatever it takes to make that meat tender. And at the end of that process, what I've got is some just unseasoned shredded meat and then also some really nice stock. Mm-hmm. But what I also have is a manageable amount of shredded meat, manageable amount of stock. I'm probably going to have 2 or 3 quarts of stock and maybe 3 or 4 cups of shredded meat, which is good for a meal or two. Mm-hmm. For each of those things. And then they don't even have to go into the freezer. If you cook a lot at home, then you might be able to utilize all that stuff within the week. And then come next week, you just repeat that maybe with a different protein. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe you switch over to turkey or you could throw a whole rabbit in there and do the same exact thing. And you come up with this shredded meat. And with that, you can make, I mean, I'll just, you know, the recipes that are in the book, you know, flautas, dumplings, you know, where you make like a quick little dough and then you put that shredded meat in there and then you boil that. It's like a giant ravioli. Manicotti, which is like a stuffed pasta dish. Mm-hmm. That's baked, you know, tomato sauce and cheese. And you can do that with any meat. Just take the shredded meat, mix it with a little ricotta cheese, stuff like that. And yeah. So or you can turn around and make dumplings or a pot pie, anything. So with that shredded meat and that stock, and you can use them both together.
How do you know the ratio of like water to add to the amount of protein/bones you're putting into a stock?
You don't. You can't really make a mistake with this. If you put too much water in there, then your stock's going to be a little diluted and thin, but who cares?
Uh-huh. Do you add salt?
It doesn't matter. I don't. You could add a little bit, but I usually add salt in the further steps of the recipe.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll mix a little salt in with the shredded meat and whatever application that's going in, and then that stock would be used to make a soup. Or like in your pot pie, or you know, if you're going to do the dumplings, you know, you could serve them with a little bit of that raw. We make flautas, you know, roll that shredded meat up with in a corn tortilla, and then pan fry that, and then take the stock and cook some dried chilies in that, and then use that for dipping. You dip that crispy flauta in there, and then you have that stock.
Oh my
with
goodness.
Like garlic and chilies, and it's so simple. I mean, it might sound complex, but seriously, quite simple.
Yeah.
And you know, anybody can do that. And I think, you know, we've always talked, and this is one of the reasons I really enjoy talking to you guys, is that, you know, your audience is engaged and they want to do this stuff. And it's just, you just got to know that it's simple and you can make mistakes. But a lot of times this fear of mistakes is unfounded, and that you're not really going to put too much water or too little water in there. It's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll just be a little stronger, a little more diluted, but at the end of the day, it's still going to be good.
Well, if it's too diluted, you just cook it longer, right? And boil it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. There's like, yeah. I think another thing kind of as a just confidence booster for somebody who might be listening and hearing this and, you know, trying to get started in this is like, you're going to kind of mess a few things up starting out, and that, you know, it's just like, it's like anything you do, man. Like, but if you stick with it and you learn like some of the basic, I guess, and I'm nowhere near on your level, Jesse, but I'm just saying, like, I like to cook and I do it pretty well for me. It tastes pretty good. So, but like once you learn some of the basics of how to, you know, once you learn what a scrambled egg is supposed to look like, I mean, you can do it over and over and over again. Right. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like, it's the same thing. Like, once you learn what the good stock tasted like that you made, then you can do it over and over again, and you got it the rest of your life, you know? And that's, like, that's just priceless, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
So, I've messed dishes up. I think, no, that's a good reason to hunt deer is because there's a lot of meat. So, if you mess up one dish, mm-hmm. you still got more. You know, if you go out and catch two red breasts and you mess one up, you only got one more chance, you know?
Yeah.
So, for that meal at least. But, you know, I mean, something that's a little more valuable, I guess, like an elk backstrap or something, you know, you may only get one of those every, you know, 5 years or something. So it's something you don't want to mess up. But I was going to kind of go back to the fish here for a second, because here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to actually go to Cabo. And so my 10-year anniversary was last year, which, if you know, as we kind of talked about, it's a disaster of a year for the world, pretty much, as far as travel and stuff goes. So we didn't get to do our 10-year anniversary trip, and we literally haven't done a trip without my kids in 10 years. So we decided to go to Cabo, and we got us a charter. So I plan on bringing back some fish, like quite a bit.
Rooster fish, Dorado.
Yeah, Dorado.
Marlin.
Yep.
Yeah. Are you going after the big ones or just the kind of the mid-range?
Well, they're smoking yellowfin tuna and striped marlin right now. But the way I understand it is kind of mid to late June when we'll be there, the Dorado is like, that's when it starts really picking up. And my guide is actually a like his favorite fish to catch is the Dorado. So I was going to try to get some tips on you. I don't know how much traveling with, you know, meat you've done, but if you had any thoughts about how to, like, what the best way to bring back the fish is, I would be up for hearing that for sure.
Yeah. I think if you could back seal it, you know, you might want to just pack a little food saver or whatever, the smallest back sealer that you can. Mm-hmm. And then I would, you know, back seal and freeze. And then bring it back. I mean, if you can put that in your check luggage or whatever, you know, or a soft-sided cooler. I mean, most of, like the Yetis are made to fit as carry-on luggage, and so you can pack one of those full of frozen fish and get it back. And obviously, frozen fish isn't quite as good as fresh fish, but if you vac seal it and freeze it super fresh and doesn't have a lot of water on it, get it nice and dry. Mm-hmm. I think it travels really, really well. And that's best case, you know, you got to bring it back.
Oh, yeah.
But I will say while you're there, definitely take advantage of any of those restaurants and try to get out of the touristy compounds and find some of those places in town that will cook your fish. And that's heaven right there, you know.
Man.
You know, we even took her. I've been there once. I've done very little travel and caught fish, but that was one place that I have been. And we actually took a rooster fish into one of the restaurants that we found. And really? Everybody says you can't eat those things, and it was really good.
It's
really?
A big Jack, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you a Jack Crevel eater?
I've eaten some. Yeah. And there's also other members of the Jack family that are quite good.
Yeah.
Pompano, but, right?
Yeah.
Aren't they a Jack fish?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Almeco Jack is excellent.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so, but we took this rooster fishing. We had a Dorado and a rooster fish, and we took it into this one place, and they made it. I mean, the guy in the kitchen, he knew what to do with that rooster fish, and it came out great, you know? And
that's cool.
How'd he cook it?
I remember specifically he did a cream sauce with dried chilies in it. Mm. And I think it was something about Whoa. That. It just really worked.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They have, not to get too off topic, but they have They have these clams down there, and they're called chocolatas. And they're these little brown clams, and they serve them raw. They come out of that Sea of Cortez. They're super cold. And what they do is they scoop them out and they chop them up. And then you squeeze lime on them. And they're so fresh that they'll move when you squeeze that lime on them.
My goodness.
And it'll change your life. Good stuff right there. There's some great seafood coming out of those cold waters there.
Yeah.
And like I said, you get off the beaten path a little bit and get into town and find some of those places. And you know, just like when you're traveling anywhere,
yeah,
and especially around the ocean, you know, you're destined to find some really great food. And I think that, yeah, you're going to be there at a great time of year and bringing back some beautiful, hopefully some Dorado. And you might,
yes.
I know they have the culture down there is big into smoking the marlin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's something you don't see a lot of that in Mexican food is smoked fish or smoked anything really, but that is something that they do with the marlin, and I don't know if that's offered as a service, but you might want to look into that too if you can find.
Is that smoke cured like a salmon that you just eat, or are they using that like to make a dip or something like that? I mean, I guess you could, but like, you know, what's traditionally?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really recall how they served it.
Yeah,
but I remember seeing it. It was almost all the menus.
That's cool.
Did you?
Yes.
So do you like marlin? I mean, like I've heard mixed reviews on it, you know, but obviously, like they get kept a lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, just you know, I think like kind of like the rooster fish. I mean, a little bit on that kind of almost metallic side,
uh-huh.
And then not on the. I mean, for me. I love most fish.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just love fish, even if it's not the best. So yeah, I mean, but if you catch one and you're going to keep it, then I guess the take home is there's delicious things you can do with it.
Yeah.
And you know, when in Rome, if they're smoking the marlin, there might be something to it.
Oh yeah, dude. I'm all about trying new stuff too, man.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. If I catch a yellowfin tuna, I've kind of struggled with the tuna steak thing, and I know not to overcook it, you know, but like,
yeah.
I just feel like I don't do it right. It doesn't quite turn out. It seems really inconsistent, and just sometimes maybe it's the quality of the tuna I'm using. 'Cause a lot of times it's just store-bought stuff, you know, but, you got a tip for cooking a good tuna steak?
Well, I mean, more than anything, you don't want to overcook it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tuna needs to be medium rare on the high end of it. I'd say, you know, rare to medium rare, or raw, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's just such an excellent fish to eat raw. You know, just cube it up and marinate it with a little, you know, soy and sesame oil and a bowl of rice. And that's lunch right there.
Mm.
But I would say, you know, super hot grill, very clean grill, and then oil it a little bit and season it. And just, you know, you want to just kind of zap that outside, let it rest a little bit. And then, but yeah, I wouldn't take it beyond medium rare. And
mm-hmm.
if you do want to cook it all the way, then think like almost like tuna, canned tuna, you mm-hmm. know, where you're going to want to like slow cook it with like maybe some olive oil and garlic until it kind of it's moist and it spreads, and you can make, you know, like tuna salad or something with it. But mm-hmm. you know, that great of tuna, maybe not the highest and best use.
Most of it's going to be raw, you know, but like,
yeah,
I do like, yeah. I like the thought of a tuna steak with like just a good sear on the outside, because I love when I sear a steak, like that crust is just one of my favorite mm-hmm. flavors in the world. But yeah. You know, I have messed that up before, so I was going to see about it.
On that vein, as you can tell, I'm into the weird a little bit. Jesse, you're the guy for this question. We have a fish on the Texas coast that is in the tuna family, locally known as bonita, but mm-hmm. The common name would be little toonie. Have mm-hmm. you eaten a little toonie and made it taste good?
Yes. And it's exactly what I was just talking about, where you're going to slow cook them.
Okay.
So it's imperative to remove that bloodline.
Uh-huh.
Take that black bloodline out. And we actually do things with that, too. I'll get into that. Well, I'll tell you, right? We'll salt that and smoke it until it's bone dry. And then we'll grate that and use that as like a seasoning. But anyway,
that's cool.
That's getting kind of beyond it. But that cubed meat off the loin, cleaned of all the black bloodline, cubed and maybe seasoned with salt. Maybe give that about 12 hours before you cook it. And then we're going to really, really slowly cook that in a lot of olive oil, and some lemon, and some garlic, and some bay leaves until it's just falling apart. And basically what you have at that point is just like a canned tuna,
mm-hmm.
That you can use for tuna salad and things like that. It's not going to be a great grilling fish, you know,
mm-hmm.
but for that application, I mean, if you kept it and your desire is to eat it, I think that that's probably the best way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I guess to just kind of meter that a little bit, if you are, you know, say out in your kayak beyond the breakers and you do happen to catch one as bycatch whenever you're trying to catch kings or something, are you going to let that thing go or are you going to try to eat it?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm eating it.
Okay. All right. That's what I want to know. I want to know if it's worth keeping. You know what I mean? Because I've caught a few and usually they end up being bait for sharks is what we usually do with them. But,
sure.
You know, it's that's kind of how the world goes. You have to decide if you want to eat something or use it for bait a lot of times. Same thing with the panfish, right. You know. But, yeah. No, that's cool. I'm glad to know. I would like to – I've never messed with that or a jack for food purposes, and I'm kind of interested in it, you know.
Yeah.
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 What about if I get into the Dorado? What's the best way to cook those things up once I get home?
You know, with Dorado, I think also I like to remove the bloodline from them.
Okay.
I feel like that any of the usually when you get a bad piece of mahi, it's because it's just too old, and you're eating from the store, from a restaurant or something. But I feel like, you know, I like to trim out that bloodline fairly well, and then you just, I mean, I think just like a really good pan sear on that, you know. A nice, dry the fish real well, get a layer of oil, sear one side, flip it over, sear the other side, and cook it till it's just cooked through, you know, I think, you know, around medium well.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll kind of coast into being done. And it's just, it's a really great fish. I think my favorite thing about Dorado is just the texture of it. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a super tender chicken thigh. You know, it's just, it's got a little shred to it almost. It's got like a bigger grain to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the flavor is excellent too, but I really love the texture of it. I mean, it grills. I mean, you can fry it. It fries really nicely as well. And you could roast it in a real hot oven. You could grill it. You could pan sear it. All those things. I mean,
it's
probably a little delicate for smoking.
Okay.
But you know, I think smoke. You want a more flavorful, oilier fish than that. Mm-hmm. But you know, real versatile and real crowd pleaser too.
I mean,
most people are gonna love it.
Cool, man. Yeah. I'm pretty stoked about it for sure. I mean, obviously, like catching a rooster fish would be awesome. But I mean, I think there's a good chance that we catch some tuna and some mahi. So.
Excellent.
I'm pretty stoked about it, man, especially the tuna, you know. I just like, I've always wanted to be able to, I've never caught a tuna, and I've always wanted to just have a bunch in my freezer that I could pull out for like 2 months, you know.
That's the goal. Yeah.
Guys, as you know, we've been working with Cruiser this year, and we are super excited. They have just released their platforms to us, and we've got them in a box right now. I actually received them last night, so we actually have not looked at these things in person because we're going to do a surprise unboxing, and we're going to put that up on the YouTube channel here really soon. So be looking for that, and in the meantime, go shopping at cruisersaddles.com. Okay, so what's been going on this spring, man? I know you've been working towards this book. Has that gone as planned?
I mean, I don't think anything goes as planned much anymore.
Yeah.
And this is definitely falls in that category. We were looking at an April release on it, but I guess the good news is that it was delayed by our own actions in that we just kept adding to this book. So worked on this thing. It's the Hog Book, and spoiler alert, it is about pigs. it turned out, and you know, when you have it in a file on a computer and you're working on it day to day, you don't realize how big it can be. And then when it finally went to print, it came back at 420 pages.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a good Austin number for you.
Everybody keeps pointing that out. I have no idea what you're talking about. So it came in. It's huge. I was like, oh, that's why, you know, and we just kept adding recipes. I think we're at about almost 120 recipes in
there.
That's
cool. Man.
There are four butchery sequences, you know, each detailing a different sized pig. And I mean, I'll just go back up. And it's like, this book is just about, you know, kind of demystifying feral hog. It's got, differently from a field, though, it has hunting information in there about, you know, like, you know, techniques on stalking pigs, on setting up on pigs, baiting them, you know, a recipe for a good hog brew. You know, it's got strawberry Kool-Aid in there. It's got a plan for a rudimentary, like, comma or figure six hog trap. There's stories about hunting, and then it's got skinning, gutting, different methods. You know, we do like a hanging from the gambrel method. We do the tailgate, you know, gutless method, and we do field dressing. And then it goes into butchering four different category sizes of pigs. So small pigs, medium pigs, large sows, and large boars. And then after each one of those butchery diagrams has all the relevant recipes to that size pig. And then it's also got sausage making, curing, for so like making a cured ham, different types of like not salami per se, but like spreadable spicy salamis, Texas dry sausages. There's recipes in there for heads. There's recipes in there for testicles. There's recipes in there for hearts, livers, caul fat. And then different cooking techniques, roasting, braising, grilling, chops, tenderloins, name it. It's in there. And, you know, I'm really proud of it. I think it's great. It's got a lot of really good photography in there. We self-published, which also means that we were in control of the edits. So we didn't have anybody up in New York screaming at us that it was too graphic. And it is very graphic. I mean, there's some pictures in there that are, you know, wouldn't have made it into a book had we been under somebody else's control. And so, you know, and then that delayed it a little bit. You know, we launched a Kickstarter for the book in December, that went better than we could have possibly believed. We were the sixth highest earning cookbook in Kickstarter history.
Wow. That's cool.
Man. Yeah.
And so,
congrats.
And we thank you. I mean, we doubled our goal. And I mean, it was just incredible. We came in, which enabled us to just order more books.
Yeah.
And so we've already sold a giant chunk of them. In fact, this first shipment that's going to land in late June, is sold and they're all gone. And then we have to wait until the next shipment comes in July. And then we should probably get in front of it a little bit at that point, I hope. Mm-hmm. Unless it sells really well, which is not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, for real. I can tell you one thing. I mean, the book is a much better idea than what we had this year, where we decided we would do a video to explain the gutless method. And we actually did get censored on it. So
yeah, YouTube hates that.
Did not like that at YouTube. So KC, you know, did a lot of work trying to show everybody how to do that, and I don't think anybody got to watch it. But
that's just so unfortunate too, because I mean, it's just reality right there other things that are not edited that are not reality,
you know,
and that are far more detrimental. and destructive to, say, a young person's psyche than seeing proper method for gutting a hog. So,
yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that happened to you.
Well, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, we kind of figured
the world whenever you run a hunting YouTube channel. But, yeah, you know, you do your best to, I don't know, present, like you're saying, the real world stuff. And I think that, not to get just super philosophical on us here, but the removal of death from people's lives is probably a large portion of some of the issues in our society that have come to a head. You know, when people don't understand life and death, then they have a real hard time understanding life and death. You know, like it's kind of self-perpetuating, you know, and you need to, if you're going to consume meat, you need to be able to at least understand, not say enjoy, but understand that there is a butchering process, you know?
Yeah. So, agreed. And I look at it now and I don't even think I don't even see the gore. And
oh no,
there's one shot in particular in the book. And when you get your hands on it, you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. And it is graphic, but I think it's also just beautiful too.
Yeah.
And what you're looking at, and you're looking at nature and these amazing things that it can make. And I mean, sometimes it makes a mess too. And this is, you know, a bit of a mess, but it was real. I mean, and that pig was killed and processed and eaten, all of it, you know, and everything that we documented, and it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the education process that we're trying to present to other people to, you know, ostensibly make this world slightly better place by thinning out this invasive. And so at the end of the day, I think, it's good, but I hear your point and couldn't agree with you more.
That.
So
cool, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I would. I hope that success continues for you, man. I really do, because we really do. Like I said, we enjoy your friendship and everything, and what you do is just the coolest, man. You know, like I've for years now thought, man, the guys that get to cook for a living and show people like this, and then, you know, you've taken it to another level, obviously, where it's like, these are wild things, you know, this isn't just me cooking a cattle steak or beef steak, you know, like this is stuff that I'm going out and capturing and making a meal out of, you know. And so it's just such a good quality lifestyle, man, and it's something that I definitely want to pursue, not necessarily a career out of it, but, you know, like the ability to incorporate that into my daily kind of life, you know, my walk, I guess. So
yeah.
I hope that it continues to do well for you, man. And I'm excited for the success you've had. I'm looking forward to the book, because I've used your book quite a bit, but in the last 3 years, I'm such a whitetail bum that haven't had a house. And so I've been very limited on my cooking and what I can do. And been, you know, don't have many utensils and all this and that, and I'm like I'm weeks away from moving in right now to our new house. So like I literally, like, the first things that are coming out are my cookbooks, you know. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I'll get one to you guys.
Awesome.
I'm real proud of it. I think that people are gonna enjoy it, and I think that, you know, it's just like that demystification process that surrounds hogs. And you know, I've always said, I'm not advocating that we eat every single one of them, but every single one of them that's dead, if we give it a better chance of getting eaten, then I think I've done my job.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to eat them all, but definitely give them a shot, and don't believe everything you hear.
Yeah.
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 I.e. the rooster fish, right?
Yeah.
Hey, while we got you on the phone, tell everybody about your restaurants again, just so they have a refresher.
Yeah, so Dai Due is open. Dining room's open. I mean, ironically, we're not at full capacity, but it has nothing to do with COVID. It has to do with a nationwide staff restaurant staff shortage.
Yeah. It's funny how that works.
You know, just one thing after the other. But anyway, but our dining room is open. We're trying to serve as many people as we can with what limited resources are available. The menu is just popping right now. It's the best time of year. You know, all these farms around here recovered pretty well from the big freeze, and we got in our first blueberries, our first peaches today.
All right,
we're still seeing. Oh yeah, these blueberries are incredible. We're seeing some you know, spring vegetables like carrots and leeks and lettuces and things like that. So the menu changes often. It's all locally sourced. We've, you know, a lot of game meats. We're serving a lot of Nilgai these days, a lot of feral hog. We serve domestic hog. We serve, you know, dry aged Wagyu beef from south of San Antonio, quail, chicken. And then a lot of fish too. You know, we're doing a, you know, black drum, and then hopefully if I can get my butt in gear, you know, have some bluegills on the menu here.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a fun little menu. It's very simple. I think it's pretty approachable. All Texas wine and beer, also, just to stay with the theme.
What about shrimp? Are they in right now?
Definitely. Yeah. You know, we do. I prefer those white shrimp, the bay whites. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, you know, just get our sources realigned. You know, we kind of, a lot of that stuff got dropped in the last year where we didn't have a full menu, and we got to kind of reestablish where we're getting everything. And you know, and everything's a little off kilter. You know, like, and prices are going up. Seafood is extraordinarily high right now. It's crazy. But yeah, we'll definitely have shrimp on here soon. Grilled shrimp. We're doing a grilled shrimp dish and black drum. Other fish that, you know, come down the pipeline. Just kind of depends. You know, simple desserts. It's a fun place. Mm-hmm. And then yeah.
I've been to Daidoe, and it's fantastic. And I was honestly surprised that, like, it wasn't as expensive as you would think. You know what I mean? Like, you would think that the way that you guys have to source and stuff, that it's, you know, it's not quite so commercialized, and it would be, you know, more expensive. But it, I mean, it was very fair
and approachable for a normal person.
Yeah, for a normal person. Yeah, and I was like, man, this is. So then we went and bought books and shirts and everything. We were like, we got money left over. We bought everything we could, and we left there with handfuls. So it was awesome, man. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Appreciate that a lot.
For sure. So it's worth it if you're in Austin. Actually, our girls softball team here locally, Rains, where my wife coaches, she coaches volleyball. But the softball team is looking like they're going to be in the state tournament again this year, and which happens down there. And so she's trying to convince me to go down there and maybe make a date night at Daidoe again. So we're thinking about it. So we may see you again soon sometime. But we appreciate you coming on, man. And like, this is your third time, I think, with us, and it's
third or fourth.
Thanks, fourth.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Might be.
So it's but it's always like, I don't know, I just leave inspired, man. I'm like, dadgummit, I can go out and eat anything. I'm just gonna walk out the yard and start browsing, you know. Yeah. So, but
leave the mushrooms alone. Right?
Hey, we're about to find some chanterelles at my property, dude. I'm looking. Man. I'm looking.
Yeah, I saw some East Texas posting today. They're finding them, and I'm pretty jealous.
Are you
a
part of that group that I'm thinking of?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah.
I look for some. This is not the best part of the world for mushrooms out here. We find a few morels and maybe a chanterelle or two, but you guys are definitely more in it.
Yeah, yeah. We can find the shanties for sure. So look forward to that. But
yeah.
Anyways, man, thanks for coming on for the fourth, and we're ready for the 14th. So it's gonna happen pretty soon, dude. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you guys, and I appreciate you letting me come on and chit-chat.
Absolutely, man.
You know, the only thing I can think of that would go with all this that we didn't talk about is a good old fresh heirloom tomato.
Hot diggity dog. You know, I was walking around my garden this morning looking at my laid-over corn because we had a...
Was it sleeping still?
Yes. Dude, the wind got crazy yesterday while we were here, but I've got blooms on a lot of my black brandy wines. Mm-hmm. And I've got a couple little Cherokee Perps tomatoes ready.
They're coming out.
And I've got Sweet Million, which is not an heirloom, out there that I picked this morning. I'm going to let ripen up today and eat this evening. So
I've got Sweet 100s that are about to go nuts. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some turning yellow right now. And I've got a pink brandy wine that is about that big, which for people who can't see is about two and a half inches. And I got a some kind of bluish purple one coming off already. It's not blue. It's not super blue yet, but it's got a little bit of color in it.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
I like that.
So I'm pretty excited. We've actually, you said we were here when the corn got blown over yesterday. We actually have been doing these hunt breakdowns. So like, if you go to YouTube, you'll be able to see some of these things start leaking out this summer. But we thought it would be a good idea as we started getting some of these deer mounts back to be like, you know, hey, here's the mount and check out, you know, this hunt and why we killed this deer.
Yeah.
We've always talked about like, man, there's a couple of times when we didn't kill and or did kill and we just didn't quite fully explain why we did or didn't kill.
Yeah. It's one of those things that happens a lot with self-filming, especially because you, it's just hard to tell the full story. And a lot of times we're, truth be told, we're filming for entertainment purposes a lot. You know, it's like a hunt. You get to watch and see, you know, a big deer get shot, which is real cool. But I know that a lot of y'all who listen and watch, as well as myself, I like to look at the deeper stuff. And you can't always get that from video, or at least you can only see part of it. And then as we explain, like, what's going on, the situation, the wind, and all that kind of stuff, you can really get the in-depth version and take, like, a cool video of some dudes shooting a deer. Not a video of some cool dude shooting a deer, because you know, but and then, you know, actually help that or let that help you be successful this year.
It's kind of like you could go to the game and watch the game and kind of make your own assumptions and stuff like that, and you don't get to really, you know, you're sitting third deck, you don't get to hear what's going on in the field and stuff, you know. And I mean, or I guess. Or you could stay at home and watch it on TV and have some of the inside info with the reporters talking to the coaches and, like, you know, the commentators talking throughout the game about what's going on and what they're seeing as ex-NBA players or whatever, you know? So, like, that's kind of what we're doing is we're ex-NBA players as well. we're sitting there kind of commentating the whole time and going, like, these are the things that I'm thinking right now that I didn't get to talk about in the interview after I messed this up.
I call it red pilling. So if you've ever watched the movie from the 2000s, The Matrix, Morpheus offers Neo, Mr. Anderson, at that point in time, a red pill and a blue pill. The red pill, he's going to enlighten him. The blue pill, he just gets to go back to normal life and forget everything. So it's kind of like when you red pill on football. Used to, it was fun to watch the quarterback give the running back the ball and see where he goes. But now you're like, okay, they're in cover two. And, you know, like all that stuff is going on. And that's kind of how you are with, or a lot of us are with whitetail. Like, we love to watch hunts, but you really want to know what's going on.
Yeah. It's like, it's fun to watch that hunt, but then afterwards you're like, man, I should have took the red pill right there, though.
That's right. Give that deer the red pill. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, there's some cool hunts that we've been filming, hunt breakdowns too, from the channel over the last couple of years. So, those will release this summer, as well as we're making lots of plans to do Map Scout Challenge stuff that's going to be happening. We have a YouTube series or a podcast series, sorry, that's coming out, this, end of June, I think. That's put on by Onyx, is helped put on by Onyx, and it's going to be all about these like public land hotspots, kind of. So we got lots of cool stuff coming, but just hang in there for another couple weeks, and you'll be able to see this stuff start to come out, and it'll hopefully sail us right into the season and give us the most red pill knowledge that we can possibly have,
baby,
when it's time to hunt. So with that, remember to check that out, and remember, this is your element.
Living it.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate Batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate Batteries. I use Interstate Batteries in my boats. I use Interstate Batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meet Eater Live, head it back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2nd, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4th, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5th, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.